Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
What up? Welcome in. This is the Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be making this part of your day. Thanks so much. Alongside Joey Taylor, who's going sans glasses today. I always tune in to see the glasses.
Some days we got to go sans glasses.
Some days sans glasses. Beautiful sunny day in Southern California. I'm off to the Super Bowl. Joey and Colin get to hang out here in sunny Los Angeles. Welcome in. We got an outstanding show for you. Former Patriot assistant and head coach in the National Football League, the man genius, Eric Mangini, will join us upcoming this hour. So will Chris Broussard. So will TJ Houshmandzadeh. So will Katina Mobley. And Ray Boom Boom Mancini will join us live here on set. What a show. Okay, so next week's Super Bowl week, and we still continue to react to championship weekend. The Saints, everyone else seems to be on to Atlanta, but the Saints are throwing lawsuits and asking for second and third apologies from the NFL for one missed call. But I'm looking ahead at the possibility of the last time we see number 12. Now, full disclosure, I changed my vote on Monday. I've sat in this seat before. I have my own show, 3 to 6 Eastern time, 12 to 3 Pacific, Falls Colin Show. Whether it's that show or this show, whether it's this network or other networks, I previously believed, and I still on some level believe, that Aaron Rodgers checks every box in terms of athleticism, arm talent, ability to make plays in the clutch, ability to extend the pocket, play through injury, lead inferior teams to superior results. But what I saw Sunday in Kansas City, against a really good defensive line and against an incredible offense where you got to keep scoring because they're going to start scoring. What I saw the weekend before when they demolished the Chargers. What I saw in the Super Bowl last year where they didn't punt. What I saw in the Super Bowl before that where they came from 28-3 down for the greatest comeback in Super Bowl history. All right, I'm changing my vote. I announced on my show, announced on Colin's show, that's the best quarterback I've ever seen. Because part of what makes being a great quarterback is not if you check every box, is if you can succeed in spite of the boxes you don't check. And I don't necessarily want him to retire. Like, you don't want to see greatness go away. And I understand, fully understand, that there is nothing in his life, which will ever fulfill him. Like, look, I love my kids, I love my wife, I love my family, and Tom Brady, much like all these other quarterbacks, is going to be a success in business and in life outside of football. But nothing will feel the same as being under, behind center, in front of 80,000 people, in front of 100 million people watching you, and walking into that locker room afterwards, leading 46 men and coaches into battle, have them all eyes on you, believing in you, and you telling them they can do it, everybody else telling them they can't, and you doing it, and them looking at you like you're a god. There's nothing like that. Like, I understand why especially quarterbacks don't want to retire. Like, I get it. It is way more, winning is a more powerful drug than anything else that's ever been created, including the illicit kinds, because you want more, you want more, you want more. But there does come a point in time for perspective, right? Like, I think that the greatness of Tom Brady was they won even though he didn't play particularly well, right? Like, let's not get it twisted. He threw two picks, which were both on him, and then threw a third one. I don't know if you put it on Gronk or on him, 50-50 split, whatever. Three interceptions in a championship game on the road, that's not good football. He knows it. And the game plan really in the first half was not to emphasize the greatness of Tom Brady, was to run the football. And I know he overcame 3 third-and-10s. And I know they had a great drive in overtime where Kansas City never got the ball back. I'm not disputing how awesome he is. I just told you I changed my vote, which, by the way, you're allowed to do. Like Rob Parker, you're allowed to take an L. I was wrong. All right, you're allowed to go like, I was wrong. It's okay. Happens all the time. You're allowed to go, I was wrong. My bad. I didn't think Steph Curry would be an all-star, let alone a legend. I was wrong. It happens. It's the percentage of times it happens when people stop listening, and maybe the inability to admit when you're wrong about things. Tom Brady's proven many people wrong. But I was watching that game, and I was realizing how close they came to losing it. I'm watching the post-game reaction. I don't know if you guys have seen this footage, but there's footage now of Tom Brady walking in the locker room, shaking hands and hugging all his teammates. And there's a lot of cursing, which we'll bleep out. But he's hugging guys, and he's going, unbelievable. 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 I mean, can you believe it? Unbelievable. Take a listen.
Great game, baby. That was unbelievable. Love you, man. Played your ass off.
Unbelievable. He just keeps going around. Unbelievable. You were great. Unbelievable. Do you know why it was unbelievable? Because it was. Do you know why people said they didn't have good skill position players? Because they don't. I mean, Rob Gronkowski runs like Tom Brady, and Tom Brady, a couple throws there, were more like Rob Gronkowski throwing the football. And then you think of it. They started off as underdogs against the Rams. And if you're old enough, you remember the Rams were the greatest show on turf. They had lit up the NFL for 2 years, and they had Hall of Famers all over. They had the best left tackle in the league. They had a quarterback who was a perfect fit in Kurt Warner for their system. They had Marshall Faulk, arguably the best running back in the history of the NFL. If you really look at Marshall Faulk, he's a groundbreaker in terms of ability to run it and then catch it out of the backfield. Hell, Torrey Holt should be in the Hall of Fame. So should Isaac Bruce. I kind of go through it. They had everything. And if you go back to that Super Bowl, you remember that was back when they introduced each individual player.
And now for the LA
Rams, back to the St. Louis Rams, Kurt Warner. They said, you know, now it's every guy. And then it was the New England Patriots who were the first team to go, no, just say Patriots, we're going out. Like, no, we want to introduce, recognize each. No, just say Patriots, we're running out. And they all come out. And it was an unbelievable underdog story. Right? Like, Tom Brady wasn't supposed to be the quarterback. Drew Bledsoe was. They hid his lack of experience. They hid some of his weaknesses, and he still had the ability. And they probably weren't supposed to be there. Why? Because the Raiders were the better football team, if not for the Tuck rule. But they won anyway, because that's part of the lore, the legacy, the aura. That's part of the story of Tom Brady. Is that he can take his 46 and beat your 46, and then switch at halftime and take your 46 and beat their 46. Same thing with Belichick. But they've been this close several times to the whole thing falling apart. And Gronk feels like he's done. And though he can be replaced, that doesn't mean he's replaceable. And Brady feels like there's some miles an hour off that fastball. Like, the league eventually is going to catch you. And I just think that this is one of those, if you win, you can't do it if you lose. But the thing that Hollywood tries to simulate is what sports actually has, which is the happy ending. It does exist. John Elway. Hell, Peyton Manning couldn't throw a football. Wasn't particularly good in the Super Bowl. But they won anyway because the defense was awesome, the special teams was good, and they found a way. And you're right off into the sunset. Michael Jordan, forget the Wizards thing. Michael Jordan holding the follow-through in Utah. Like, these things do actually exist. And for Tom Brady, who will go down as arguably the greatest athlete, okay? The greatest athlete does not mean greatest having the pure amount of athleticism, but greatest athlete in terms of most accomplished, most successful, most prolific when it matters the most, or how it matters the most, which is when the buzzer sounds, does your team have more points than the other? Because if you think scoreboard doesn't matter, why the hell do we have it up there, right? They don't award gold medals to people who come in second or third or fourth. You got a chance to go full circle. Started against the Rams, a team that probably didn't belong, wasn't the best team in the AFC, could end against the Rams. Again, I don't want to chase anybody off into the sunset, but and I'm not defending Rob Parker. Dude, you're wrong. Take the L. He did it again. But there's a reason that Tom Brady walked around and said, unbelievable, unbelievable, unbelievable. At least 30 times he said it to his own teammates. You know why? Because it really is unbelievable that he's here, that they've accomplished this again. I know Belichick will be back. I know they'll figure out a way. I know the Jets aren't close. I know the Bills aren't close. I know the Dolphins aren't close. But Ravens, Steelers, Chiefs, Chargers, Colts, hey, they're all younger. They're all hungry. They all want what you have, and you were this close to not having it to begin with. There does come a point in time in which you can have the storybook ending, which Hollywood tries to create, but only sports actually has. It's the only place where this actually exists, where there really is a Cinderella story that comes through and wins at the end, or a longtime great who, Derek Jeter, right, gets a walk-off in his last at-bat at Yankee Stadium. Like, that only happens in sports. And Brady is 9 days away from potentially having the greatest ending in the recent future of history of football, and maybe the greatest ending ever in the history of football. Yes, Elway won two championships and won his last, but to win six and to win your last one and to win your last one against the team you beat the first time and to do it in remarkable fashion. Every sentence needs a period. And your choice is continue to run the risk of a Brett Favre-like season in Minnesota, right? Like, we do remember that Brett Favre came back to Minnesota. He threw the interception in the Superdome. Remember the Vikings announcer? How could he do that? Well, he's Brett Favre. That's what he does. Risk-reward guy. But then, Chile was his head coach. He sent three guys down in a private plane. They bring him back. He's got that dusty old Nike hat. You know, he gets off the tractor, gets off the plane. All right, we'll do it again. How'd that work out? Disaster. He lost his starting streak. The dome in Minnesota literally collapsed. Not figuratively, literally collapsed. That's how bad his final year was. And the Patriots and the NFL have a mantra, which is better a year too early than a year too late. And if you're 12, after, by your own estimation, an unbelievable win on the road in Kansas City, if you back that up against the LA Rams in Atlanta on Sunday, why not just call it a day? Six rings is more than anybody can ever fathom. Nine Super Bowls is more years than most players will ever contemplate playing in the National Football League. I think Brady should walk away if he wins it.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
There are various reports about interest between the Dallas Cowboys and Sean Payton. Payton, of course, came to the Saints from the Cowboys, where he was a member and a play caller for Bill Parcells. And the interesting part about these reports is neither side has denied it. Not that denials or even non-denial denials will take us off the scent, because we've seen enough denials. You know, Nick Saban, how many times do I have to say this? I'm not going to be the head coach in Alabama, right? How many times do you have to deny it? We're like, there does come to a point you were like, look, I don't believe anything anybody says. But the fact that no one has said anything, that Jerry Jones, who loves to do his interviews, hasn't said, Jason Garrett is my coach and there's no Sean Payton coming this way. Like, nothing. We have heard nothing. So let's just offer up the possibility, right? Would you do it if you're Sean Payton? Knowing that Jerry's going to be a meddler. Right? That's knowing Jerry's going to be a meddler. As opposed to what he has in New Orleans, where his GM in New Orleans is also the GM of the Pelicans. So not really making decisions. It's more him and Jeff Ireland, who's doing a great... Jeff Ireland was kind of a disaster in Miami as a general manager. But as a as a player personnel guy, they've done a very nice job. Everybody can point. They've done a nice job in New Orleans of putting together a young, active defense and getting them skill position players, obviously like an Alvin Kamara and a Michael Thomas. But man, Drew Brees didn't look so good. Remember, Drew Brees runs the benefit of playing with arguably the best caller the last 20 play caller the last 25 years in football. That's Sean Payton's in that. Before there was McVay, there was Sean Payton. They're the same guy. And he plays in a dome. And it should be pointed out that this year the Saints played against a complete disaster of a division, right? I mean, Atlanta's so bad that everybody got fired and everybody was hurt. Carolina, Cam Newton had shoulder surgery yesterday. Couldn't throw a football after a hot start. Suddenly couldn't throw a football, and their defense was so bad, everybody got fired. And everybody got fired in Tampa. That division was trash, and it will not be trash for long because you still have Matt Ryan, you still have Cam Newton. And if there's anybody who can fix Tampa and fix Jameis, it's Bruce Arians. Right? That's what he does. He fixes the quarterback. So I think the division's going to be, we'll see, but feels like it's going to be remarkably better. And Drew Brees was bad at the end. He just ran out of steam. Same offense, same play caller. Hell, they even got Ted Ginn back. Well, they didn't have Ted Ginn. They got Ted Ginn back. Like the pass completion to Ted Ginn that should have set up the game-winning touchdown. That should have been intercepted. It floated and he got fooled. That should have been picked off. Heck, even the defensive pass interference that wasn't called that New Orleans is going to forever complain about, right? Like New Orleans continuing to complain about the defensive pass interference is going to be like your wife complaining about that thing you did 5 years ago at the family cookout. I can't believe you said that thing, and she's going to keep bringing it up. That's New Orleans. Like, dude, the defensive pass interference is going to be Seahawk guy talking about not handing the ball to Marshawn Lynch in the Super Bowl. You're not wrong, but we're all so tired of hearing about it already. But how about this part? It wasn't a good pass. One, it wasn't open. Two, you got to throw it to the outside shoulder. If you play the ball, and Drew Brees threw a ground ball on first down. They'd be better off taking three knees, kicking a field goal than what Michael Thomas checks out of a run play, throws to Michael Thomas, and unless Michael Thomas's shoelaces can catch a football, that was a bad pass. So you got a quarterback who, like all these guys, they get older. Even in a dome where you can hide some lack of arm strength, you can't hide the Drew Brees thing for much longer. It's the Saints. The division's going to be better. Or you could go coach the Cowboys, they don't have to give Dak a new contract. They got an elite running back, an elite offensive line. They got a pretty good defense. And what's the only thing missing from the Cowboys? What's the only thing? Well, you could say, like, I'm not a huge Dak guy. I think he's good. But play caller? Like, all we need is a guy who knows how to draw him up in the dirt. And if you ask people who played against New Orleans, be like, you know, Drew's not that good anymore, but he's really bright. And they have one wide receiver. And they have one hybrid running back. And that's kind of it. And they dominate the league. Why? Because of that guy. Sean Payton's that good. Imagine if you put him with good younger players and a younger quarterback. I mean, obviously you have to deal with a meddling owner, but couldn't this be the moment to which you go into Jerry and go, Jerry, you've tried it your way since Jimmy Johnson left and it didn't work. Do it my way. You guys did a good job getting good talent. All right, you built it up. Let me take it from here. Let me take it to that next step. I don't know if I'm Sean Payton. I don't think it's a crazy idea. I think it's one you absolutely have to think about. It feels like you topped out New Orleans. Remember, when he took over New Orleans, that was after Katrina, but people forget, the Saints were the Browns for 20 years. Like, Aaron Brooks won one playoff game, right? But outside of that, like, they were awful. It was a bad franchise. And even though they've gone through three consecutive bad years where they had the worst defenses in football and they can blame it on Bounty Gate, whatever they want, the point is, feels like you topped out over there. Why not consider a new home?
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Did you see or hear what Jeannie Buss had to say about the Lakers?
I did.
Reader's Digest version would be, hey, if you don't want to, you know, I heard that she's heard whispers about people not wanting to play with LeBron James. Right? She told this in the Low Post podcast. I think here's the quote. I heard that about Kobe, too. That makes me laugh. Because if somebody doesn't want to play with the best player in the NBA right now, I don't want them on the team. Now, there is a little bit of the guy at the club who says, hey, you want to dance? And she says, no. No, I said you look fat in those pants, right? That feels a little bit like what Jeannie Buss is doing right now. Like, oh, you don't want to come here? Fine, we don't want you. And as much as I know she loves Kobe and Laker fans love Kobe, I don't think that actually helps your argument. I just don't. Kobe, obviously, very, very different from LeBron. And Kobe, more polarizing than LeBron. He just is. Like, Kobe literally did not care, does not care if you liked him or respected him. Whereas LeBron wants everybody to like him. That's just the difference in the makeup of their personalities. And so I feel like Jeannie's missing it. And I honestly feel like she's off message. You know what her message should be? Hey, we're healthy. Pretty good. And to the East Coaster who woke up like, wow, you lost to the Timberwolves with no LeBron. Yeah, LeBron didn't play. Lonzo didn't play. Tyson Chandler didn't play. That's three. You're down three starters. You're not beating a playoff team or a team with decent talent most times when you don't have three starters in the NBA, especially when one of those players is LeBron James. And, you know, a couple of the losses they suffered, they didn't have Kyle Kuzma. You don't have Kuz and LeBron. Who's going to score? That's 46, 47 points a game. So I feel like she's off message. Her message should be, we're one of the best defensive teams in the league. We just got to get healthy. We got to continue to have our young players evolve. And whatever Rob and Magic decide to add or not add to the roster, I'm all for. Whatever Luke decides to do, I'm all for. That's the support. Instead of doing the, you know, if you don't want to play with, that felt like an unneeded shot at Kevin Durant and an unneeded shot at Kawhi Leonard. Even if you're running the Lakers and you felt like Kawhi turning down overtures and telling people close to him, I don't want that. Or Kevin Durant saying, you know, he doesn't want the sycophants in the media to cover him. He just doesn't want the LeBron thing. Like, even if that's what they said, that doesn't mean you have to match fire with fire. And especially comparing LeBron and Kobe. Like, no. You're Jeannie Buss. You run the LA Lakers. Hey, we got 17 banners. We're going to add 18. Look at where we were last year. Look where we are this year. Everybody knows we have cap space. We're looking for a few really, really good men who want to raise the world championship trophy. That's it. That's it. And I may be the only one. I think if they add a shooter, maybe even somebody like J.R. Smith, you add a shooter, that should be the second best team in the West. And look, people can go crazy because Boogie Cousins made some shots last night, and he may end up getting back to being the Boogie Cousins he was. But Boogie does change the Warriors' dynamic. He gives them another scoring option, but they didn't really need much more scoring. He changes them defensively. They've never played big ball or with a center down the stretch. Will they with Boogie? We don't know. Their bench is not what it used to be. The Warriors, as the Rockets showed last year, could be had. Now, I don't think this year's Rockets aren't as good. And there feels like they're never going to be healthy. And Oklahoma City, though they shot it well last night, that team can't shoot. I don't think Denver is ready for prime time. Like, look around. The Lakers are tremendous defensively. They'll get LeBron James back. When they had LeBron James, here's what people forget. They were ahead of schedule before all the injuries set in. Ahead of schedule. And so while she, in part of her statement in the Low Post podcast was, you know, we need to preach patience. She needs to be patient in her statements. I'm a buyer. I think it's a flawed roster. I think they need more shooting. I think, you know, some of these basketball mercenaries that are well-traveled for a reason. You know, I think they played Lance Stevenson too much because the air guitar, instead of playing Svi Mihailuk, who has a higher ceiling, will be more of a solid shooter that can stretch, open up the defense. think they overvalued JaVale McGee. He's a backup. He's always been a backup. He'll kind of always be a backup. And they're trying to kind of patch the center position on the fly. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope is a good player on a bad team and a bad player on a good team. Like, but we know why he's here, because he's a Rich Paul client, right? Hold that roster spot for one more year so they can go get a big boy. Like, it's not a great roster, but it wasn't like the rest of the NBA said, hey, does LeBron James shooters? Why don't you take a couple of our shooters? Like, that's not actually the way it works. But they were ahead of schedule before LeBron got hurt. Ahead of schedule. Even with Rondo's injuries. Even with the fact they had to go out and get Tyson Chandler. And so I don't love the messaging here from Jeannie Buss.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Let's welcome in TJ Houshmandzadeh, who joined us, former Pro Bowl wide receiver. And you see him throughout our shows here on Fox Sports Radio and Fox Sports One. Hoosh, when you watch the Patriots, the game plan, the way they played in the first half, the way they kind of had to change and evolve in the second half, what was your reaction to what happened in Kansas City?
Kansas City couldn't get off the field on third down, and the Patriots pretty much ran the ball whenever they wanted to. They somewhat implemented the same game plan against the Chargers. We're going to run the ball. We're going to keep your offense off the field, and if you can stop us, we'll change. If not, this is what we're going
to
do.
It's kind of interesting. It felt like they did to Kansas City what people used to do to them at the height of Tom Brady's powers, right? When Tom Brady was great, when he had that 50 touchdown season, like the whole thing, well, you got to keep Tom Brady off the field. That's what he did to Pat Mahomes. Kept him over there on ice.
They've evolved offensively. They've turned into a running team. It's benefited them now. It turned into a guessing game. They came out the first few third downs. They ran the ball. And I'm sure the Chiefs, it kind of clouded the defensive coordinator and also the players. Like, they were guessing. Are they going to run it now? It's third and six. They run the ball with James White, first down. 90% of guys in the NFL, at least play callers, that's going to be a pass play. And so they just kept the Chiefs off balance. The Chiefs could not get off the field on third down.
Bob Sutton lost his job. There are people that are critical of him, but they did play man-to-man. That's supposedly the way to get to Tom Brady, right? You got to play man-to-man, and then you got to pressure him up front. Was there something Bob Sutton should have done differently that he didn't do?
So, yes, they did play man-to-man, but the difference was when me just watching the game, the majority of time when Julian Edelman went in motion, he ran that deep over route. So he's running away from the defender in man coverage. And when he
hold on. I tried to explain to somebody. They're in their car, and they're like, okay, he's in motion. What's a deep over route?
So he would come in motion, yep. And he would run across the field.
Okay.
Running away from coverage, which is the guy playing him man-to-man, so he's going to chase you.
But if he's a man-to-man, why wouldn't he have inside leverage and force you to go back outside?
Because he went in motion. And when you get in motion, when you go in motion, normally the defensive back backs off of you and gives you a two-way go. They normally don't press you when you go in motion. And that's why the Patriots bring him in motion to get him a free release. And all he did was run away. And so that last drive, even in overtime, the Chiefs were in a two-man coverage. One third down, they busted the coverage, just let Edelman go right through the middle. It was a first down. The other time, the guy just didn't get inside to take the inside away. And then when they tried to play robber is when they bring that safety down to rob the middle to take that route away. That's when he hit Gronk on that slant route. And so they just had the Chiefs guessing. They were guessing. And the Rams have better players in the secondary, in my opinion, than the Chiefs, so this should be pretty interesting.
Doesn't it feel like, though, the Rams, supposedly the weakness, I've always been told, the weakness to Wade Phillips-style defense and to the Rams personnel is linebacker and the ability to have those linebackers cover. Will they be able to cover it like that? That, to me, says James White's going to have 15, 16 catches in this game.
The Rams linebackers there aren't very big. They're athletic. And so you have to have an idea that they are going to attack you. This whole week of you have to have that idea that you are going to be attacked. James White is going to run option route. He's going to break out or break in. Now, you can have combo coverages to where you shade outside and force him inside because you have help. If they play that robber is there to help on that inside option route with the running back. I'm sure Wade Phillips will mix it up. They will play press coverage. That's, in my opinion, is the best way to play the Patriots because with that they got four first-round picks on the D-line. You got Herndon, you got Ndamukong Suh, you got Dante Fowler, you got Michael Brockers. You got four guys that can, if you can make Brady pat the ball, meaning take one or two hitches, you have a chance. But they're going to have to mix it up.
TJ Husmanzada joining us. I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is The Herd. Okay, let's get to the Saints game. I haven't heard your take on the penalty. First part, like, I feel like not enough people being critical of, and I know they audibled out of it, but throwing the ball on first down, don't you run it? Get that clock moving.
I was just telling Jason yesterday, everybody's critical of Sean Payton. Oh, why'd you throw it on first down? Sean Payton has come out and said, that was a run play. They gave us the zero look, Drew audibled out to a pass. Mistake number one. Was it PI? Yeah, it was pass interference. Did they miss the call? Yes, it won't be the first. That's not going to be the last call they miss. It happens. You're complaining about it. I get it, because if I was a Saints, I'd be pissed. But it is what it is. If how many more plays happened after that? The Saints had the ball in overtime with a chance to go win it. They missed the face mask. The Saints' first penalty, you know when they got their first penalty of the game? It was 5 minutes and 26 seconds left in the third quarter. So you can't – there's bad calls both ways. Yeah, I would be upset if I was on the Saints, but you had the ball. There are plenty of plays after that. You just didn't get it done.
What do you think's wrong with Todd Gurley? I mean, is it a matchup thing? Is he not right? Like, Todd Gurley went from the most dynamic back in the league to – yeah, he's the other guy in that backfield.
Dude, it's – That's the million-dollar question. It's so baffling that...
It's more than $1 million, but yes.
It's baffling that you have been the guy the entire year, and in the two biggest games of the season, the playoff games, Anderson has basically stolen the show. He's been that guy running the ball. Right out the gate, Jared Goff's first interception, right through Gurley's hands. The third down, people aren't going to complain. The third down that he dropped, that Gurley dropped, you can... The Saints pass interfered the Rams on that play. That would have been automatic first down. They didn't call it. The receiver outside was being held. They didn't call that as well. I don't know what's wrong with Gurley. This is Super Bowl. Todd got to play. And if he can be himself and run routes and run the ball, it's going to be tough to deal with the Rams. But can he do that?
You think the Rams win?
I do believe the Rams win. The key to beating the Patriots is pressure up the middle. They're going to double Aaron Donald. If Ndamukong Suh can play the way he played last week, you affect Tom Brady up the middle. You make him move laterally and don't allow him to step up in the pocket. That's the best way to beat the Patriots.
TJ Husmanzada joining us here in the Herd. It's weird what's coming out of Pittsburgh, right? First, you go back a couple weeks ago and was like, man, he's gone. Owner's talking about he's gone. Now they're, well, hey, Pouncey came out and said it's a brotherhood, and there seems to be a little bit of dialing back of, you know, maybe we can have a conversation and work some things out. Is it just it's too punitive in terms of hurting your roster and hurting your salary cap? Or is this cooler heads really prevailing in Pittsburgh to bring him back?
The smart thing would be cooler heads prevailing, but they have to move on. It's like a marriage that you just want to make it work, but it's just really no point. They should just separate him and move on. The toothpaste is out of the tube. You cannot put it back in now. The damage has been done. We were a brotherhood during the season as well, and all this wasn't going on. When Ben criticized AB in the Denver loss, and he criticized – what happened to the brotherhood then? They know AB is very valuable to that team. They could be trying to drive up the trade value. I don't know, but AB needs to be gone. For the culture, the salary cap – ramifications should not matter. For the culture of your team, for the Pittsburgh Steelers, if we are a team and the team comes first, it should not matter the salary cap hit. You have to move on because you will set a bad precedent for the rest of the guys on the team.
There was an article yesterday, Seth Wickersham wrote it, it was about the Cleveland Browns. And it basically chronicled Jimmy Haslam's time as owner there. And obviously there was some dysfunction there and infighting between Joe Banner and Michael Lombardi, and then it even went to the firing, you know, most recently of Hugh Jackson, and now they walked in and said, Hugh, you've lost the team, even though they've been to overtime 4 out of 8 games. He told him to get the F out of his office, right? And they ultimately fired him anyway. Look, you were part of a franchise that went, before Marvin got there, incredibly dysfunctional, and then Marvin kind of straightened things out. How much does ownership affect the actual football team?
You know, it's funny, when you're a part of the dysfunction, you don't realize that it's dysfunctional until you go to another team. I was drafted to the Bengals. That was all I knew. You hear other guys, oh, it's like this with us. You don't really understand.
Okay, tell the story really quick. For people who have, so you show up, your rookie training camp, what was it like?
I didn't think it was bad. We didn't have security at our training camp, so people could come in and out whenever you wanted. And they did. Plenty of people that shouldn't have been there.
Like what kind of people?
I can't even say that on TV.
Why? You said it on radio. You told me before.
Strippers.
Yes. At training camp.
At training camp. Every day.
Every day.
Midnight to like 4 a.m. Every single day. And the guys that were on that team know exactly what I'm talking about. Every day. And it was like, I'm calling my buddies like, dude, do y'all got strippers on y'all training camp? They like, nah. I'm like, oh, wow. Every day. And then when Marvin got there, we got security. And so that stopped. But it was the vets. They would have all this going on. And I'm like, God, is it like this on every team? I thought that was normal. And then you start calling around like, nah, this is not normal.
There's some hope that Baker Mayfield can, you know, that there's real legit hope there. His numbers against the bad teams was excellent. The numbers against the good teams were not. But he's only a rookie. And he does seem to have kind of a leadership quality. Can he overcome, can a quarterback overcome that dysfunction?
Yes, because if you're winning, how much dysfunction is there? When you win, winning covers up a lot of things. And they have the Browns have a really good roster. They have a really good roster of young players. And so if they can win, it doesn't bode well that you're great against the bad teams and not so great against the good teams.
Well, but they were just bad against everybody before. They won one game in 2 years combined.
You would think as he gets more experience, his play will improve mentally and physically. I think Baker Mayfield is a hell of a quarterback. He needs to calm down a little bit. He's a little too high and too low. He needs to be more even keeled, but that's not his personality. Will he be able to manage his emotions? That remains to be seen.
Ketino Mobley is joining me next. We're going to talk some Lakers. Are you a buyer into Lakers? You got 15 seconds.
I'm a Laker fan. Of course I'm a buyer.
No, but are you a buyer into this Laker team?
Yeah, I am a buyer. I don't like how they lose to teams they should not lose to. Like, I'm watching the game last night against the Timberwolves. It was a good game, and then the fourth quarter, it's over.